B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help you rate it.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, hour three, Felger and Mass coming up on 4:06 in the afternoon. We're presented by DraftKings. Murray coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Mass and I on remote. Before we get to this nepotism story, how about those two little pieces of breaking news? If you're watching on the simulcast, you missed it, but the first has been, you may have heard of it by now, this charity golf match. And I say charity, I'm not sure exactly the full nature of it, but again, this match between Tiger and Phil with Brady and Manning, I want to get to that, after we hit on this Patriots thing where they have released Cody Kessler. Give me that again, Murray, if you would, please.
Yeah, so Ian Rappaport, within the last 30 minutes or so, first had it. The Patriots cut Cody Kessler, according to a source, leaving just Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer in their quarterback room. A surprise, considering New England cut and brought back Kessler during last season.
Okay, so this could mean nothing, or Maz, it could mean they've got something else in mind. They've got something else in the pipeline. And they needed to ditch a quarterback. And that, when I say something else, that means Cam Newton. That means Andy Dalton. That means that they need to clear room, or maybe just do right by Cody Kessler, because we're about to sign a third guy, which means you have no chance. So we'll give you every chance you can to go land a job. I mean, that to me would be the timing there, that there's something coming and they wanted to do right by the player to give him every chance to sign on with another team. So here we go. Do you think there's any chance we've got a bigger quarterback move coming down the line here for the Patriots?
Yes, I do. I think this relates directly to the quarterback position. So when, you know, we discussed the possibility of the Patriots having taking a quarterback in the draft, I told you that it didn't feel to me like they were necessarily angling that way, because they already had three quarterbacks on the roster. Why are Hoyer and Kessler still here? Now Kessler's gone. I think it's draft related. That's what I think. All the reports and indications out there from people like Jeff Howe are that they're not in on Dalton. They're not in on Newton. I mean, and I'm not eliminating those. So certainly things can change. I don't know that they would tell the world if they were in on those guys. But I think it's quarterback related. If I had to guess, I'd say it has more to do with the draft.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too.
Go ahead, Murray.
Yeah, I don't think that they're looking at Newton or any of these retreads, and I would hope that they're not. But I wouldn't be surprised if they used one of those compensatory picks. They got four of them in the third round on someone that they look at as a project.
So I don't know why they would release Kessler now, though. And the thing I just thought of was to do right by him. But for you, there's no reason. You're not paying him yet. You know, unless he had, I guess I'll look it up, but he doesn't make anything. I doubt there's any sort of roster bonus. You know, I can't imagine there'd be anything due for him like that. You don't pay him till the regular season. So why would you release him now without knowing the full situation? And the answer is, you know something's coming and you want to do right by him by letting him go and give him a chance to sign on with another team. So I wonder about that. Okay, so keep an eye on that. Cody Kessler, the third quarterback, the presumed third quarterback, has been released by the Patriots. You got something big coming down the pike? I don't know. So again, just looking at his salary, he had a base salary of $910,000, a workout bonus of $25,000. They're not working out. He's not going to hit that workout bonus. So there'd be no reason to release him here other than doing right by him. I mean, I don't know. So we'll keep an eye on that. The second thing is this golf tournament, Maz, this golf idea with Woods, Mickelson, Manning, and Brady. How do you feel about it?
Okay, so when they did the first pay-per-view with Mickelson and Tiger, I had zero interest. Zero. As in zip. None. And I would never pay for a product like that unless there was, you know, extenuating circumstances. Now, in this case, given the absolute shortage of things we have to watch, would I tune in if it's free, and it sounds like it's going to be? Would I tune in and watch it just out of a curiosity factor because I need something to entertain me? My answer is yes. So I will watch it. If this is legit, and it sounds like it is, I would absolutely watch.
Yeah, I guess it's a good idea. And I'll say in the same breath, I'm not sure I'm going to consume it. Like, I'm just, you know, to me, what... What would have to make it interesting is the personalities. And you mentioned it, Maz. When Tiger and Phil did that first thing, I watched like a little 10 minutes of it. You know, Mickelson's supposed to be this personality, but they're such duds. you know, those golfers are such duds. Even the quote-unquote interesting ones are duds. And Brady, do you think he's going to give you anything out there? He's going to be mic'd up, but is he going to – he'll trash talk a little bit. I mean, I have golfed with him, and he does take it seriously. He is competitive, and I know he's going to be like, you know, talking a little bit of smack out there, but to the point where it's – you know, the only interesting guy there is Manning, and he's not even that interesting. He's just got a likable personality. The others, I mean, otherwise you're just watching four guys golf for nothing, two of which are going to be good but not great. And it's like, so, I don't know.
Well, and as you get to this part of it, to me, if we get the Manning that we get in the commercials, then I think it could be fun, because I could totally see Manning being a ham or a clown and trying to get guys to laugh and loosen up, and that might get other people to engage. Like, I could see that part of it. But again, at the moment, I'll take just about anything. So if you're asking me would I consume it, I'll tell you that I would start with it and see how it goes. And then if I think it sucks, I'll tune out. But at the moment, I think people are thirsting for anything entertaining from a sports standpoint, particularly if there are competitive guys out there, even if they're just dinking around. And so to me, I like the idea. I mean, I'm in on anything that you can do right now to entertain us. And golf is a good one because they don't have to be within 20 feet of each other, which is probably the way Tiger likes it anyway.
Yeah. Well, so I'd be ahead, into Mark. It too, because we're talking about, you know, that they're speculating that it's going to be in mid-May. It's not like there's going to be anything else on the slate at that point. So I would take it. I would take it if they were thumb wrestling. I'm with Maz. Well, I will take anything right now.
So this proves my earlier point, Stu and others, that I can leave my baggage at the door. It's not just about my personal opinion. Like I don't know if I'll watch it. I'm not really that interested in it. It's still a great idea. It's a great idea, and it's a great thing to try, especially, and I would say this, hopefully, especially for Brady, but for all of them, really, 100% of the proceeds go to the coronavirus effort. 100%. Don't give me this thing where half the all of it goes to the frontline responders and the hospitals and the PPE equipment, all of that, 100%. And not that I follow what, you know, Mickelson's doing, or I don't know what those guys are doing for the effort, but Tom Brady, who just put the supplement pack on sale for $147 to boost your immunity during the coronavirus. And, you know, I'm not sure what Brady has done for the effort. You see a guy like Drew Brees donate $5 million, boom, off the top for the folks in New Orleans. I don't know what Brady's done. I don't know what any of those guys have done. So I don't want to single out Brady, but for all of them, 100% of the proceeds go to the effort. Don't you think, Maz?
No question. Yeah, that's the only way I think. If you were to do it for anything else, I think people would get pissed off. So I would hope the players or you know, the golfers in this case, both the players and the golfers, as it pertains to Manning and Brady, would be smart enough to look at it and say, well, I'm not going to ask for an appearance fee. You know, it's something like that. And I would also say the same of whichever network, whoever it is that televises it, whatever it is, all advertising, every cent from the thing should go to help the any charities as it pertains to people who have been treated for, lost jobs, whatever, with regard to the virus.
Okay. I'm going to take a call here instead of bringing up the nepotism thing, which we'll get to next segment. Let's pop up John in Newburyport, Stu, again. I keep freezing up. If you don't mind, please line two. John in Newburyport on the Patriots quarterback situation. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Hope you guys are safe. On Stidham, when you guys were just talking about the draft and the releasing Cody Kessler thing, I don't think that they're actually going to go after any quarterbacks. I think that their project is Stidham, and now that Brady's gone, Stidham's their guy. His numbers, he had big games in his junior year in 2017 when he beat Alabama. He was a stud in the preseason going into the draft, like the way too early mock draft that Mel Kiper put together. He had him going as a first quarterback in the draft going, and his numbers only slightly dipped in his senior year. I think his touchdown interception ratio was 18-5, and the year before it was 18-6. So,
also, John, you know, I mean, let's just acknowledge that whatever he did, and thanks for the call, so you can drop him. You know, you can look back and say there wasn't much of a statistical dip. Whatever he did his senior year killed him, because he went from a first round prospect to the fourth round. to the end of the fourth round. So, and that's a consensus. That's not just one team or the Patriots. That's the whole league, because he wasn't taken till that. So something happened to him his senior year. But his junior year, my guy Todd emailed in, 66.5% completion percentage, 18 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl, 10-4, best conference in the country in the SEC. You know, he was a guy.
Yeah, and then he melted down that senior year. There was a couple of games. There was one against Tennessee. He had like 3 or 4 turnovers, and people were ready to bench his ass. Or, you know, and so it just turned that quickly, and that's why he ended up dropping the way that he did.
You know, the other thing on him, really, when you look at it, and you say, now, he didn't have a big body of work at Baylor. So, but even so, like, generally speaking, his completion percentages were, you know, 68.8 at Baylor in a small sample, 66.5, as you said, and very few interceptions. I mean, his touchdown interception ratio in college, 48-13, which is almost 4-1. So there are some barometers there that I think would give you reason to say, you know what, the kid's worth a shot. And in the preseason last year, to me, he looked pretty decent.
All right. But what are the Patriots up to? Because they just released a quarterback today.
Right.
Does that mean someone's coming? Does that mean someone's, you know, the apple of the eye in the draft? Or what are we talking about here? So that's on the table. Also, we want to get to the Steven Belichick story that we read today with some interest. And your calls, all next, 617-779-0985.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go, on the Sports Hub app. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
I was curious how you feel your son Steve is developing on the coaching staff and in his role.
I'm very fortunate to have a good coaching staff. We have a lot of good coaches and guys that really make my job a lot easier because of how thorough and comprehensive they are with each position and their players and the organization of, you know, so many things that go on out there. So just keep it a general comment and, you know, give the staff a lot of credit and praise for any success that we've had because they, honestly, they do most of the work.
Okay, it's a little about Belichick cut on his son and his staff. A little something to get you into this topic. They wrote about it in Pro Football Talk, and there was a big takeout story in USA Today recently on Steven Belichick, and it raises the question of nepotism and the whole can of worms that's opened up with Belichick having his sons and Steven now most prominently on his staff. Did you ever thought about that, Mass?
So I do it, and for me, I don't like the practice of it in general, and not necessarily for these, you know, ethical reasons. People get pissed off. Why does the son get the job? I just think in the case of a sports team, particularly one like the Patriots, you're asking for trouble. And so it just introduces a dynamic that doesn't need to be there. And, you know, without getting into too many specifics, there are always rumors swirling around about this coach doesn't get into that, get along with that player. And if it's the coach's son, does that create a dynamic with the head coach? And I don't like it. Okay. I don't like it. Now, that said, do I think that Bill Belichick could manage it in such a way because he would make it clear to his son and demand from his son the same effort and intensity he gets from other people on his staff, if not more so? My answer is yes, because I don't think it's his nature to take shortcuts or to give people special treatment. Now, you know, obviously things get gray with family, which is why I don't like it in there at all. Okay, I don't. And to me, the bottom line with this kid is it's all going to depend on on what kind of coach he is. If he's a good coach, then my answer is fine. If he earns it on the merit of being a good coach, I'm all for it. To me, it gets awfully gray when you're talking about someone's son.
Yeah. As Florio writes, it's a tricky and sensitive subject, as evidenced by the fact, and this fascinated me, that the usually tight-lipped Belichick actually provided a statement to USA Today via email for the story. Belichick commented on the story. And here was his quote. Quote, there are many father-son coaching combinations in the NFL, and any challenges are far outweighed by the rewards of working together on a daily basis. And that's it. You know, that's all that he said. And so what I think he's, you know, I think that's a personal comment, right? That the rewards outweigh the challenges from Bill's standpoint.
Right.
Which, like, I get, of course. Wouldn't you love to work with your kids? I mean, that's, I mean, I know not everyone feels that way, but I think on balance, it's that's a nice thing to be able to go to work with your family or show up with your sons and show them.
You get to watch them grow their career right in front of you.
Like, yes.
It's kind of rare.
And it is like I can feel that tug. I would see it, you know, if my daughter wanted to be a sports reporter and like bring her along in the business that I know and I've been through. Like, I see that tug. I get it. Like, for you selfishly, that makes total sense, that any challenges are far outweighed by the rewards of working together on a daily basis. It's your kids. You love them. You want to work with them, be with them all the time, especially when you get older. Got it. How about the rewards for the team? I mean, as, you know, he's talking about on a personal level. How about the team? Does it work for the team?
Well, so the only way it works is if he's a good coach. And this is why I say to me, I just think when you introduce it in a sports dynamic, it's a little bit different, particularly football, when you get 53 guys in the locker room. And I know, you know, he was calling some of the defensive plays last year, but correct me if I'm wrong, was in the secondary too, right? Was that, yeah. Or was that the year before?
He was a secondary coach, I think. Yeah.
Safety, okay. I believe, yeah.
Yeah, so I know that he's dealing with a smaller group of players, but I think inevitably there are going to be people on that roster, when you're talking about that number of players, who are going to raise an eyebrow and said, what's this kid doing here? What's his football experience? What the hell does he know? Is he here just because he's Bill's son? So to me, that's inevitable, and that's the reason I don't like it. And Bill's comment in that story, to me, tells me a couple of things. One, he's basically saying, don't look at me. I'm not doing anything that hasn't been done in the past. This is a common thing in football. Kyle Shanahan, the Ryan brothers, like, there are lots of guys who have coached in the league that were sons, Shula. Mike Shula. He was another one, right? Who Don Shula's son, who coached in the league for a while. And so, to me, it feels like Bill saying, I'm not doing anything that anyone else hasn't done. You know, as you like to say, Mike, do business as business is being done, because Bill knows it's a controversial issue, and which tells me that he's probably especially careful. But I just think it asks for trouble, man. It asks for trouble. And I don't feel this way just about coaches either. I don't like it in the front offices or anything of the like. To me, somebody's got to prove their worth. It's not about bloodlines.
Well, yeah, here's – go ahead, Murray.
Well, just quickly, and like, when it comes to his son, like, I get it. And as Maz is saying and using examples, like, it's happened in the league before. And as long as he's a good coach, I'm okay with it. Where I have a problem with the nepotism with Belichick in recent years, it's with his buddies that are brought in, like your Brett Bielmas and guys like Schiano, especially Bielma, who was just – you know, I think one of the reasons that Michael Bennett didn't work, and the reason that Mike Pennell didn't work last year, and it's like, who the hell are you? You've been here 5 minutes, and all right, you've been a college coach, but you're really only here because you're a friend of Bill. Like, that's where I get pissed off by it.
So, the first thing, Maz, I totally agree with you that line, there are many father-son coaching combinations in the NFL. That right there is classic sort of deference, you know, deferral. It's like, hey, look, everyone's doing it. Which isn't to say what you're doing is right or what you're doing is working. It's just saying, hey, everybody does it. So that in and of itself is an acknowledgement of, as you said, it being a tricky subject. But again, it all comes down to the competence of the kid. And, you know, are the kids helped or hurt by working with their dad? Do you think Kyle Shanahan was helped or hurt by working with his father, Mike Shanahan?
Well, I would say in some ways being exposed to his father's knowledge, because Mike Shanahan was a good coach, that there was game there. I mean, no question. He got to see his father at work on a daily basis, understood the kinds of things his father looked for in game plans and in players, scouting, all that stuff. Now, I would also say there's a negative, and that he probably took a fair amount of grief behind his back or otherwise that came along with being the coach's son. So knowledge-wise, do I think it can be a benefit? Absolutely. In terms of your credibility with your players, I think it can hurt.
So to answer my own question, I think Kyle Shanahan was helped because I think Kyle Shanahan has a really good offensive mind, and I think he learned it from his father. And I think Kyle Shanahan, obviously, as a play caller in the big moments, you know, that's something he hasn't quite developed or hasn't gotten a feel for. But as an offensive game planner and schemer, I can't help but think that working, you know, so closely with his father didn't trickle down to him. And Kyle Shanahan runs a really beautiful offense. He really does. I know there are some quibbles. Does it fully give the quarterback freedom to be who they need to be? And does that actually hurt in the big moments? Like, I get it. But that's a good scheme. And I think that comes from his father. Let me give you another example. How do you feel Brian Schottenheimer was done by his father, Marty Schottenheimer, and was that a good pairing or not?
No!
That's a bad game, right?
You know, I can't even tell you what the hell Brian Schottenheimer did.
Choke, you know, and like just unimaginative, rote, paint-by-number offensive coordinating. And wasn't his father just like the classic sort of, you know, could motivate a little bit, but boy, in the big moments or when it really had to be there, couldn't think his way out of a paper box. And it's like, well, that makes perfect sense. You know, he wasn't done well by working with his father, Marty Schottenheimer.
Brian Schottenheimer drives me crazy. I wish he would get the hell away from Russell Wilson. It wasn't as bad last year, but the year before, all he wants to do is run the ball. Like, let him throw. Get him the hell away from that quarterback.
So here's a point that Florio makes that I think is the real issue, and that is there's nothing these NFL owners can say about it. Because the nepotism and the Spalding Smalesization of the NFL ownership ranks is frankly gross. It's frankly gross. And I'm telling you, if we're all alive in 50 years and the NFL goes down the hill and goes downhill, this is why. Because the days of entrepreneurial, independent, you know, independently wealthy guys who built things and created things, self-made men, and self-made women and self-made owners are going to be gone. The entire league is going to be owned by the kids. The entire league is going to be owned by freaking Spalding Smales. And so if any NFL owner, you know, most of them anyway, have the gall to say to Belichick or Shanahan or Schottenheimer, you know, where'd you get your, you know, any comment like that, they have no leg to stand on. I've told you to do this before. It's just a fun little exercise. Pull up the executive staff of, you know, most NFL teams, most every NFL team. Like, for example, I just did this while we were talking about this. The Minnesota Vikings. Owner, Ziggy Wilf. Vice Chairman, Leonard Wilf. President, Mark Wilf. Owner, Executive Vice President, Strategic Planning and Business Initiatives, Jonathan Wilf. First four names on the masthead, Ziggy Wilf, Leonard Wilf, Mark Wilf, Jonathan Wilf. Then the ownership partner is Scott Landis. There's a ownership partner, Alan Landis. So I don't know what their deal is there, but a couple of Landis. So it's like the Wilfs and the Landises and everyone else need not apply. This is the Dallas Cowboys, shall we? Owner, president, general manager, Jerry Jones.
That's right.
Chief operating officer, executive vice president, director of player personnel, Stephen Jones. Executive vice president, chief brand offer, Charlotte Jones. Executive Vice President, Chief Sales and Marketing Officer, Jerry Jones Jr. It's like, are those teams going to complain that Stephen Belichick? I mean, so look, we can talk about it, but those owners, they've created this situation in that league.
Oh, totally. Listen, that's what I said. And it's not something that is totally exclusive to the franchises you rattled off. I mean, look, Jonathan Kraft is the president of the Patriots. Now, if you were to ask me, do I think Jonathan is capable? Yes. Yes. So, again, to me, it comes down more to being qualified than it does to being just the son of the owner. But, you know, Charlie Jacobs with the Bruins, right? It happened. Paul Gasson, who used to be with the Celtics, Shaughnessy used to refer to him as Thanks Dad, for crying out loud, ripping him in the paper all the time because the old man, Don Gasson, owned the team. And so it happens on ownership level. And look, I think, just my two cents, because you said what's going to happen when the kids are all the ones running the league. I just think there's something different over time, earning power as opposed to inheriting it.
And absolutely.
There is, when you earn power, I think that there are certain things that you learn and do along the way that help you relate to people and certainly also educate you on how to run a business. Inheriting it? totally different thing. You don't have any of those experiences.
I'm telling you, this is the long-term issue with the league. Who's running it? Are we going to look across the league and see all the kids owning the teams and then all the kids coaching the teams? And the coaching thing isn't nearly as bad as the ownership ranks, but that's a huge issue in that league. So there's that thought. Here's an update. Come back. Your phone's on everything.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
To the phones, as promised. Patriots today release a quarterback. Cody Kessler gone. What does it mean? What does it mean? Chris in Boston, go ahead.
Yeah, so the Patriots releasing Cody Kessler, I think that absolutely means they're going to bring in another quarterback. Jarrett Stidham essentially beat out Brian Hoyer for the backup role last year, and I don't think they're going to let a fourth-round pick go into the season uncontested to be the heir apparent to Tom Brady. What do you guys think about them making a trade with Dolphins for somebody like Josh Rosen, somebody who's been with Brian Flores and Chad O'Shea, and would be very, very cheap?
Okay, that's an interesting name to me, Maz. I wouldn't rule that out. Josh Rosen, is that a kind of guy that, you know, draft a guy or draft a top 10 pick from 2 years ago who has no experience and you're starting over with anyway?
So I'd say either or. I'm okay with either one. I like the idea of it being a younger guy just because I want Stidham to have a threat from a peer. So what I find interesting about it is I wonder if Belichick doesn't want to do that for that reason. In other words, he wants to goose Stidham on a short-term basis with right. someone like Hoyer to get him to play his best now, and then next year he'll do the next step. And in other words, it doesn't always have to be the same guy. Because the downside of you know, trading for someone like a Rosen or drafting a guy, and let's just say they take a guy in the middle rounds, third round, like Jake Fromm from Georgia. If they were to do that and then Stidham doesn't play well, does it start the drumbeat of a quarterback controversy? And my guess is that Bill would want to avoid that at all costs.
I mean, they passed on him last year. I mean, wasn't there some speculation that they're going to try to trade for him, and then it was the Dolphins who ended up getting him for a second and a fourth, and he couldn't even beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I get it. There's upside. He's in his early 20s. He was a top 10 pick. But unless he can get him for like a sixth rounder, I think I'm good.
Well, to me, him or a guy drafted is fine, but I want Stidham to be the guy. So I'm just curious about this Kessler move. And to me, there's two guys. There's two guys that I'm interested in, not that I like them or want them, but Cam Newton and Jameis Winston, okay? One's a former MVP, first overall pick, Super Bowl quarterback, super talented guy. The other was just drafted first overall, whatever it was.
2015,
okay,
4 years ago, yeah.
Okay, who is just a number one overall pick who has a ton of talent. And if they're there for you for nothing in return, they're going to be released. Has Winston already been released?
Well, he's a free agent.
Well, he's a free agent.
Oh, he's a free agent. That's right. Yeah. Okay, free agent. So he's free. So, right, duh. So both Newton and Winston are there for you for nothing. And what if one of those guys is willing to take a super cheap prove-it deal, and now you get a guy like that for nothing? Is that was your plan, or that, you know, that's the first thing that you would do, but is that reach a point where the value is just too much to pass up? I get Cam Newton for nothing? Who wouldn't do that? And I don't have a quarterback? Like, that's what I'm curious. To me, the Kessler story, so to land the plane, Josh Rosen, Justin Herbert, Harold Fenefesi, I don't care. Like, young quarterback, Joe Blow, I don't care. Like, but Winston and Newton, if that means something for those guys, then we're talking about
I wouldn't
something.
Touch Winston with a 10-foot pole.
Me neither.
Me neither. Me neither. But you see what? He's there for nothing, and have no quarterback.
I'm good. I'd rather go with Brian Hoyer, honestly.
Okay, here's Kirby and Quincy on the Stephen Belichick story. Go ahead, Kirby.
I wouldn't touch Winston with Murray's pole.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Go ahead.
I'm sure Steve's a good coach. My problem with it is how quickly he got to become a signal caller. He was on the staff for only 6 years, and it took Brian Flores like 12 years to get to that point. So I'm just wondering, you know, did Belichick run him through the grinder as hard as he ran Flores? And, you know, I look at how the defense faltered at the end of the season last year. I just wonder, you know, what do you
guys
think?
It's all good. It's all a good point. You know, Steve Belichick paid some dues, but, you know, did he pay all the dues everybody else has? Certainly, Steven spent some years picking guys up at the airport and doing all that stuff, as I think, you know, the other kid, Brian, is now or has worked his way through. But, again, some guys were there for 10, I mean, for how long? So it was certainly a quicker ascent, and whether that's fair or not, that's what you're going to get when you're the coach's son. And that, I think, is what you're talking about, Mass.
Yeah, there's a built-in potential resentment there. That's all. It's built in. It's not a reflection on any one of them individually, no matter who the father is. It's just it's amplified when Belichick is the coach involved because of his success as a coach and all the things he's accomplished. But I just think it's inevitable, again, especially when you're talking about 53 guys in the room, and in training camp the number's higher, that they're going to look at there and go, what is this guy, you know, who is this guy? What are his qualifications? Why is he here other than the fact that he's Bill's kid? I think that's a hard thing to overcome.
And the family considerations sometimes get in the way of good decision-making. It's possible. We don't know. But it's possible it already has. And the Malcolm Butler thing, and, you know, everyone's heard rumors. You don't know if they're true or not. No one's got a definitive answer on that. But, you know, you wonder if that already did creep in. Did the family thing with Steve Belichick already cost you a big game? And who knows? Maybe Steven Belichick's made up for it because he's a really good coach. It's really hard to tell, right? Like, you see him and Gerard Mayo there on the sidelines going nuts and like, who made the call? Whose is it? You know, but Bill's the real defensive coordinator anyway. So it's sort of like really impossible to tell. It's harder to parse the defensive guys, I think, especially under Bill. It's one thing, you know, Brian Schottenheimer or Kyle Shanahan, they're calling plays. They have the play sheet. Like, it's a really more of a clear line about what those guys are doing and the plays they're calling. The defense, especially Steven under Bill, it's really hard to tell. All right, we'll come back with your thoughts again. Quarterback situation, a development today in New England. What does it mean, and who's the guy going forward? Florio and Chris Sims have a thought on that. You'll hear that coming back, and we get to your calls as well.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
We've now seen defensive captain Devin McCourty, defensive player of the year for the entire National Football League, Stephon Gilmore, and most recently Matthew Slater, special teams captain, praising Jarrett Stidham, talking up Jarrett Stidham. And it tells me he's going to be the starter, at least to start the 2020 season, Chris. We've got three different guys, important, influential guys in that locker room, who saw what he could do last year in practice. Gilmore talked about how it challenged the defense. It made the defense better. McCourty said the same thing. And Slater has been there. You know, when you're a special team stalwart, you get to observe a lot. And he's seen a lot. And he's seen things he likes from Stidham. So, you know, it sounds like he's already got the locker room won over before he even has to play a single game as the starter.
Well, I think they see the potential and the talent there. That's the one thing I heard from the beginning last year. You know, I heard it from some people working up in New England, you know, saw some players who raved about him as well. And I'll stand by what I said again last week, Mike. You know, Jarrett Stidham was a first-round pick. You know, he was one of those guys that slipped through the crack because the team fell apart at Auburn and we all blamed the quarterback. And it had nothing to do with the quarterback. New England is amazing at evaluating the quarterback position. And they have a certain style in which they look for. That's why they hit a home run with Tom Brady, you know, in the sixth round.
Like Florio, Chris Sims, former Patriots staffer. So he has some insight. He's tight. He's mobbed up with Birdman. Just Trembski and McNally, so he knows just how Stidham likes his footballs, that's for sure. But he hears things, New England-wise. And they love Jared Stidham. Okay, fine. I think we get the idea there. But they released Cody Kessler today. So it was the third guy, tweener guy. But I think some people were resigned to the fact that it was going to be Stidham, Hoyer, Kessler. And, you know, I even thought at one point, as you said, would we be shocked if they give Kessler a shot? He was a former third-round pick. At one point, people thought he was a starting quality guy. Now he's gone. So what does that mean? What does that mean that Cody Kessler is gone? Are we still looking at Stidham Hoyer, or do they have something up their sleeve? Your thought.
Oh, so to me, I think it's draft-related. I think that they're creating a spot there for them to take a quarterback in the mid-rounds. I'd be surprised if it's anything higher than that, because I think that they do like Stidham, and we've certainly heard good things coming out of there about Stidham. And so to me, it relates to that. I think they're going to try to introduce another potential candidate there, because, look, there's no guarantee it's going to work with Stidham. You got to cover your ass.
Okay, your call's on everything. Phil in Maine, what do you got, Phil?
Yeah. First of all, Bob Greasy went to Purdue, not Michigan.
Okay, thank you.
I'm wondering why Bill has got like a crystal ball when it comes to picking quarterbacks, even if they didn't have good college careers, but he can't pick a wide receiver.
And I'll tell you what, Phil, his overall record of drafting quarterbacks, and Jimmy Stewart gave us something on this earlier, maybe we'll do it tomorrow, is not that great. I mean, this is a guy that did draft Eric Zaire in the third round in Cleveland, and never mind the Rohan Davies and Kevin O'Connells and all the Ryan Mallets.
Ryan Mallett popped.
Thank you. All the crappy draft.
First round arm talent.
Before he got to Garoppolo. It does feel like he's on a little bit of a roll with Garoppolo, Brissett, and Stidham, who's got something. Yeah, so those three guys, maybe he's just gotten hot, but he hasn't always been all that good. What was the first thing that he said?
Oh, you got me. That
first round arm talent.
Okay. So, again, I trust Bill to do it, but his track record is spotty. It ain't perfect.
Ryan Mallett popped.
Thank you. Steve in Boston on the NBA and NHL. Go ahead, Steven.
Mike, I have about 10 points, but I'll cut them down to two, all right?
Go.
Okay. First of all, if Brady keeps this up, he's going to remind me of Anthony Quinn in Requiem for a Heavyweight. The way he's, you know, going with Tampa Bay and everything else. Secondly, now, just picture this, all right? It's a Sunday afternoon. It's a Saturday afternoon. Everybody's been pent up. We're all in the house. It's part of my job, actually, to watch a little of this stuff and to
Steven, I got to tell you something, man. I love you. I mean it. I don't want to, like, kill a customer or anything, but your calls never work. They just never work.
Ancient references, rambling.
They just don't work. They just don't work. They ramble. The Requiem for what?
I don't know. No idea.
They just never work. The calls don't work. You and I don't work. We don't work.
It reminds me of Anthony Quinn in 1939's Requiem for a Submarine. Like, what? Come on.
Max in Connecticut on the quarterback situation. Hi, Max.
How you doing? Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. How about Jameis Winston? If any organization or any coach can fix a guy, it's got to be the Patriots.
Not that
Bryce
guy.
Might be,
yeah. Okay. Bryce might be. Let me just stop him before we talk over each other some more. I've never liked Jameis Winston. Okay? I've never been a Jameis Winston guy. But, geez, he's free. What if he's free?
No, I wouldn't take him if he was paying the Patriots to take him. 100 career turnovers. He's been in the league since only 2015.
Coach some of that out of him, Murray?
Well, can they coach the deviant behavior out of him, too? Because he's going to be a problem off the field, because that's happened, too. I'm good. I don't want Jameis Winston.
88 picks in his career. 88. He had 30 last season. 30 picks. Brady hasn't picked his nose 30 times, for crying out loud. 30 picks.
It's a little high. Those numbers are a little high. But has he been coached? Who was his coach when he came into the league? Was it Dick Cotter? Or who was the coach?
It was Dirk Cutter last year. Who was there before him?
I go Dick on that.
Lovie Smith, it might have been.
Okay, that's a great offensive mind there, Lovie Smith. I mean, has he even had a chance?
But, Mike, you know, look, he did have Bruce Arians this year, and he threw 30 picks. 30 of them.
No, it's high. That's a little high.
I just think that Arians looks at him and says, oh, my God, this guy's hopeless. This is part of the reason they went after Brady. If they had seen some sort of jump in Winston's play and they said, oh, this kid's getting it. We finally got a coach who's helping him along and who's helping him figure it out. And so think of that, really. If Winston had developed to the point last year where you'd say, wow, there's a profound impact of the coach, they probably wouldn't have gone out and been in the market for Tom Brady.
I hear you. But you also know how the Patriots think. And the Patriots think value. And if Jameis Winston is free and Cam Newton is free, and I'm talking for all intents and purposes, free, sure, they're going to look at it. A lot of me hopes that today's Cody Kelsey move isn't related to that. I'm just telling you, put it on your radar. Paul in the truck on Belichick and his son. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, so Bill just doesn't do nepotism, too. He also hires one of his the cornerback's coach was a lacrosse lackey from Johns Hopkins University. Right. And also, but when Matt's talking about the credibility with Steve and Belichick, can't he just look at his dad and be like, we both stunk at lacrosse and now we're great head coaches?
Well, but, you know, the first thing that you mentioned, and Murray made this point, the son thing, like, has worked at least sometimes. Kyle Shanahan, sure, whatever. Like, and... But Murray's point is a good one. What's almost more offensive is Bill taking a guy because he went to Navy or that he once played lacrosse or that whatever. He's got a connection with Annapolis or like the Greg Schiano thing is even more gross. He let his son, he let Steven walk on in long snap. Like that to me feels almost worse than the kid thing. I'm with you, Murray. That's a good point by you.
Yeah, the buddies from college, like last year, the Brett Bielema thing. You know, I know, you know, you weren't a fan of Michael Bennett, but Michael Bennett not working here was simply because he and Brett Bielema got into it. And it's the same with Mike Pennell, who is a guy I'm going to keep harping on because that was someone that, you know, guys I trust in terms of their analysis, especially with guys up front like Bedard, he was like, oh, that's going to be a hell of a signing for them at this time last year. They get Mike Pennell. And then you hear that he's not working out during training camp, and then he's cut. And he ends up on Kansas City, makes plays during the playoffs, and wins the championship with the Chiefs. So it couldn't have worked out here? Oh, no, it didn't work out here because he had beef with Brett Bielema, a Bobo's Bobo. That's annoying.
Okay, we continue. There was some minor breaking news today with the Patriots. They made a move at quarterback. Details here. We discuss when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.